It was back in the 10th century that Pope John the 12th positioned the Feast of the Blessed Trinity to follow right after the Feast of Pentecost. Did you hear what I said? It was back in the 10th century. We've been observing this feast for a while. And this is one of the amazing things about living lives as liturgical Christians, that such a life lived year by year by year sets our lives in a much greater context of time. So for centuries, devout Catholics have gathered on this Sunday to celebrate the most blessed and holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. For us as Catholics, and I'm underscoring for this as Catholics because it is so clearly articulated in our catechism and in our teaching, that the doctrine of the Trinity is foundational. It is to our faith what a foundation is to a building. Indeed, the catechism puts it very clearly when the Church proclaims, "The mystery of the Holy Trinity is the central mystery of the Christian faith and the Christian life. There is no doctrine more important, there is no doctrine more foundational than to say that God is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit." And so today, I want us to think about the doctrine of the Trinity by thinking about who God is and what God does. Who God is and what he does. As is often the case, the early church fathers, they had the smarts, and they were closer to Jesus than we are. And because of that proximity to the Lord, and because of what Jesus said in today's gospel, that the Holy Spirit would lead them into all truth, that the early fathers were given profound insight into the nature of who God is and how we are to relate to him. And so they use two terms to talk about God, who God is and what God does. The term they use to talk about who God is the word theologia. Theologia. And the word that they use to describe what God does is the word oikonomia. Oikonomia. Now you might think those words sound kind of familiar to me. Theologia. We get the word theology. And think about that word theology. Let me just break it up for you. The last part of the word, logos, means word. The first part of that word, theos, means God. So what is theology? Theology is language that helps us to understand who God is. And so as we think about the nature of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we have to use theological language to talk about God. And as we are able to do that, we will come to see this morning more clearly that the vocabulary that we use to talk about God is Trinity, is theological language, and it is very important, because when we understand this language, we will understand more fully who God is. But what about this other word, oikonomia? Another great word that when you break it up, it takes on greater meaning. In Greek, the word oikos, the first part of the word oikonomia, means house. Oikos means house. The second part of that word is nomos, which means to manage. Oikonomia. Oh yeah, that sounds like the word economics. It's the same word. And what is economics? Economics is all about the managing of the household. Be it our own households, be it a province, be it a nation. And so here we have the early fathers of the church in helping us to understand the Blessed Trinity say that we need to have a theology of the Trinity and we need to have an economy of the Trinity. And when we bring these two things together, we will understand more fully who God is and what God does. So let's unpack each of these a little bit more, beginning with who God is, a theology of the Trinity. The very first early church father who used the phrase Trinity was a man by the name of Tertullian. Tertullian died in the year 240. He explained that the Trinity can be seen metaphorically, and this is the metaphor he used. God the Father is described as the deep root. The Son is the shoot that breaks forth from the ground and is seen in the world. And then who is the Holy Spirit? He is the one who spreads the beauty and fragrance of the love of God. So God the Father is the root, God the Son is the shoot, and the Holy Spirit is the fragrance. I like that because it helps us to appreciate how the Son comes forth from the Father, and together Father and Son emanate the fragrance of the Holy Spirit, who is holy love. But here's the thing. In our creed, which we say every Sunday, we don't use metaphorical language to talk about the Trinity. We actually use highly theological language. And one of the interesting things about the creed is they started to develop the doctrine of the Trinity in relation to the creed in the year 325 at Nicaea, but this was not completed until the year 451, 126 years later, at another council at a place called Chalcedon. Nicaea to Chalcedon, 126 years. That's how long it took the church to fully formulate the doctrine of the Trinity. And so when Jesus said that the Holy Spirit would lead the church into all truth, we need to appreciate that that did not happen overnight. And there were great battles, times when the Trinitarian understanding of God looked like it was not going to win out. But thanks be to God that it did. And so you see that for us here today, living hundreds and hundreds of years later, why do we say the Nicene Creed every Sunday? Because we need to week by week by week be grounded in theology. We need to be grounded in an understanding of who God is as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And although metaphors help us to understand God, theology is the way we approach God on His terms rather than on our terms. Thus, there is no easy way of going about it. We cannot go deep into our faith unless we are willing to be theological. The ultimate truth about God cannot be dependent on anything other than God. And the amazing thing that we celebrate is that because of Jesus Christ, He has helped us to see fundamentally what it means to say God is Trinity. Right at the end of Matthew's Gospel, in verse 19 of Matthew 28, we know these words well. Jesus says to the apostles, they are to baptize in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Notice that He does not say to baptize in the names, plural, it's one name. In the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, in the name of the Holy Spirit. In ancient cultures, one's name was equivalent with their identity. That is why the commandment to not take the name of the Lord in vain is so important. Because when we blaspheme the name of God, we are misrepresenting Him. And for ancient people, particularly, to misrepresent the name was a terrible violation of the person's dignity. And so here, when Jesus says, baptize in the name, there is a single name that reveals who God is from all eternity. To call God Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, this is not metaphor. This is the essence, the very core of God's being. Saint Pope John Paul II wrote about the implications of this very simply. And this is what that most holy pope wrote. God, in His deepest mystery, is not a solitude, but a family. Since God Himself is fatherhood, He is sonship, He is the essence of family, which is love. Here's the point. God is not like a family. God is the true family in the essence of his being. That is how he has revealed himself to us. And the point here is that the Trinity alone possesses familial characteristics and the essence of what that means in perfection. Every earthly family, the attributes of earthly families imperfectly represent the one who is the true family. Now, what does this mean? Because of the familial character of the Trinity, it reveals that at its deepest dimension, who God is very much related to what God does. And as I said at the beginning of this homily, quoting the Catechism, the Trinity is the central mystery of the Christian faith and life. And it is because of the mystery of who God is as himself that he then is able to enlighten our world so that we can see how we are to live. This should profoundly affect us. When we understand who God is and that everything exists because God wills it, those who have the eyes of faith see this familial characteristic, which I referred to at the beginning of the Mass, as the footprints of the Trinity everywhere. Last summer, I went whale watching on the west coast of Canada, and I saw killer whales. The matriarch is a whale who is over 100 years old, and she's still queen of the pod. There's some 40 whales that are part of this pod. One of the whales died prematurely, and the other whales came to the shore to, in a sense, grieve for and help to bring this whale to the end of her life. It struck me, just in that reality of how whales interact with one another, we see this footprint of the Trinity, the footprint of how God is communion and how in his creation with this majestic mammal, there is the footprint of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But for us as Catholics, the most significant, the most important footprint, that area where we talk about how God manages his household, the economy of the Trinity, has to be seen in relation to married life. I'm going to talk about married life right now. I know that not everyone here is married and that this does not pertain to everyone in the same way. But as Catholics, we have to have an understanding of the theology of marriage because it is directly related to the theology of the Trinity. So let me talk now about how God manages his household in relation to married life. Vatican II said something very simple but very important when the Church Fathers wrote, authentic married love is caught up into divine love. Now that's qualified. It didn't just say married love. It said authentic married love is caught up into divine love. I've been a pastor too long to know that sadly there is a lot of inauthentic married love. That is not necessarily joined to the divine love. But when a man and a woman together are seeking in communion to grow into the fullness of what it is to be married, their marriage is caught up and joined to the life of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Let's think about it this way. We have been made in the image of God. And Jesus Christ himself is the one who said, from creation, God planned for marriage. It's there in Genesis, it's there in Mark chapter 10, that he made us male and female because as a man and a woman come together in the sacrament of a Catholic marriage, what is supposed to happen? Well, it is a reflection of the Trinity. One man, one woman. They are two persons. But when they come to the day of their wedding and they make their wedding vow, they now commit themselves to a covenant love that is to last the rest of their life. Two people now in a very real way become one flesh. And I am not naive. I know there's a lot that goes on before guys and gals get married, but that's not the way the church wants it to be. That the whole idea of sexual intercourse is to be after the vow. Because the conjugal act is the bringing to fulfillment of the promise. And it's only after words have been spoken where one says to the other, I commit myself to you in lifelong love, that then the physical unity that says that they are one flesh is to be consummated. Two people becoming one. And I know that not every married couple is able to have children, but it is more often than not the norm. And so here's the thing I'm wanting you to understand. The love that a husband and a wife have for one another as they come together as one flesh, what proceeds from them? Offspring. What are the offspring? They are the fruit of that love. And what do we say about the Holy Spirit? That he proceeds from the Father and the Son. Do you understand what I'm saying this morning? That when we see the nature of who God is, as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three in one, and when we understand what God intends the household of the marriage to be, that communion where two people coming together, committing to one another in selfless love, then the fruit of that love is the birth of children who also reflect their image. This is why the Catholic Church, for 2,000 years, has been uncompromising in her teaching. All around, other denominations in the Christian world have buckled and fallen. But we cannot, and we never will, because our understanding of marriage is intricately related to our understanding of the Trinity. The two go hand in hand. And so we are living at a time where our Holy Father, Pope Francis, and the bishops of the church understand that we need to, as Catholic Christians, evaluate and articulate how do we hold to our teaching and how do we grow in pastoral love living in the 21st century. In his post-synodical apostolic letter entitled Amoris Laetitia, which means on love in the family, I love what Pope Francis counsels Catholic families to consider. So these are the words of our Holy Father. For those who are married, the greatest mission of two people in love is to help one another become, respectively, more a man, more a woman. Fostering growth means helping a person to shape his or her identity. Love is thus a kind of craftsmanship in the life of married couples. Even at difficult moments, one person can always surprise the other, and new doors can open for their relationship as if they were meeting for the first time. At every new stage, they can keep forming one another. Love makes each wait for the other. Listen to this. Love makes each wait for the other with the patience of a craftsman, a patience that comes from God. Our Pope is a poet, and this is in translation. This is in English. But just the way he expresses this, that marriage is this relationship of craftsmanship. And if we do not have an understanding of who the great craftsman is, if we do not understand who God is in relation to the Son, in relation to the Holy Spirit, then we will lose a sense of what Christian Catholic marriage is intended to be. But may I conclude with these words. When the foundation of marriage is rooted in the foundation of the Trinity, and together a couple are regularly partaking of the sacraments of the Eucharist and reconciliation. Then the very character of Trinitarian love will be reflected more and more in their life together. For here as one flesh, two distinct persons whose joint lives give birth to those made in their image, show that their household management is under the management of the blessed and most holy Trinity, who, as St. John Paul II reminded us, is the deepest mystery. For God is not a solitude, but a family, since he himself is fatherhood, sonship, and the essence of family, which is love. I'm in an unusual position, because I can tell you, I know that marriage is hard. But marriage is an amazing gift and a profound grace by which one person helps another person to actually grow in sanctity and to one day become a saint. That's how God ordered it. That's what he wants it to be. So do not let this culture define interpersonal relationships for you. No, it's Trinity Sunday, established by John the 12th in the 10th century, thousands of years ago, who helps us to understand that God's economy always wants to be at work transforming our homes so that more and more they reflect the love of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit.